We're doing Gemara Makos. We're at the bottom of the page, Daf Beis Amud Aleph. The Gemara told us we can have Kasher Zamam by creating a halachic entity, by making him into a halal, or making him without his children become halalim. And the Gemara answers, we need to accomplish Kasher Zamam. We ended yesterday with a question. What would you say if the person, if the witnesses are young and they haven't yet brought kids to the world, or they're old and they've already brought kids to the world and they tried to kill someone who was young and now he would never have opportunity to bring kids to the world? So do we say kasher zamam involves the collateral damage? Obviously not. So then why over here do we connect the fact that he would be a halal and his children would be halalim to their act? So that the answer is that on some level this is more direct. Their being halalim is direct. Him not having children is less direct. But that needs more definition. Mm-hmm. How far do I take that? When do I say that? Now, okay, so our first answer was Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, the Amora who went into Gan Eden alive. This build-up, this construction of I have a law. Now, where did I get that law from? So the Amora comes and gives me a pasuk, says the Ramban, and the first is commentary on the first root of the Rambam. That is the classical makeup of Talmud, where the rabbis would have the laws, they had the tradition, and then they looked for, where did that come from, actually? And then they worked their way backwards, looking for the verses. Much of the Gemara is busy doing that, where we have the Mishnah, we have the law, we know where the bottom line is. Now we're saying, but where did they get that from? And then we look back to the text, and the Amoraim look for it. So this is important because the question is, Ilan Ramon wants to go to outer space. Can we open up a Tanakh and figure out what the answer is, how you keep Shabbat in outer space? And the answer is, up to a certain generation, they could. Up to a certain generation, when they had a shaila, they could look into the Torah and figure out what the answer was using the laws of derivation. And then the generations went down, and they no longer could do that. But what they could do is say, ah, I know what the bottom line is. Let me look for the law of derivation that gives me that bottom line. That's different than saying, I don't know what the bottom line is. Let me use the law of derivation and figure it out. So those are two different things.
Already by this time, you already lost that?
Oh, so where did we lose that? So the Chazanish discusses that. Chazanish says that when the Gemara breaks down the world into Alpayim Tohu, 2,000 years, the world was desolate until Avram, at the age of 52, discovered the Ribon Shel Olam. That's in the year 2000. And then Alpayim Shel Torah, you have 2,000 years of Torah, says the Chazanish. That means the development of Torah. In the year 4,000, which is somewhere near the end of the Tanakh period, year 4,000, right? That's Be'erech, somewhere near the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash. So that's where the era of Torah ends, which means from that point onward, I could work backwards, but I can't work forwards. I could look for through the Torah to see where did Chazal get this from. But I cannot look in the Torah and say, now let me extrapolate new things. We lost our hold on the 13 laws of derivation. Lost our hold means big people like Amoraim.
So about 1,700 years ago, I think, right? About 4,000.
Right. Right. Do the math.
So what time period are they in? They're before that, no?
You're saying they're still before that. The year 4,000, you're saying the year 4,000 was 1,700 years ago, which was in the still, no, that's the beginning of the Amoraic period. No, 1,700 years ago is the beginning of the Amoraic period.
Rabbi Akiva was a Tana, and he was in the time of the destruction of the Tana. So there's no way in Amoraic before the destruction.
Saying you're talking about the Tanakh period lasted over a century past the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash. So coming back to here. So the first answer we have, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, is a derivation. When we look at this, we have to note, we have really two sugiyot in action here. We have the sugiyah of Edzomem, we have the sugiyah of Halal. I would say there's a third sugiyah, which is the sugiyah of Makot. Meaning there are three concepts, and we have to pay attention when we learn the Gemara, which one am I drawing from? Because my main theme, it would seem, is Kasher Zamam, Edim Zomamin. That's why we're always bothered when we read the first mission of Makos, like Yehuda asked, shouldn't you start Makos with, like, what do you do when you give Makos? And we discussed that. Yeah. It was Akiva who asked that, okay. So our first topic seems to be Edim Zomimim. Our second topic is lashes. Our third topic is Cholo. The first answer the Gemara gave revolves around the Psukim of Edim Zomimim. We must pay attention to this. This is a very important factor in all of our learning. The Gemara in Masechet Shabbos asks, if one person raises an object from Rishus HaYochid, and another person takes it out to Rishus HaRabim, so who is Chayav on the action? So the Gemara brings a pasuk that says, he did the act, he will get... That pasuk, he did the act, is written by Korban Chatas. It's not written by Hilchos Shabbos. The Gemara says, you only bring a Korban Chatos if you did the full action. Did the Gemara really answer the question it seek to answer? You suddenly realize that the question was not focused on Shabbos, the question was focused on a Korban Chatos, because the Gemara's answer did not answer me what happens b'mezid, what happens b'mezid with witnesses. It only answered me in a certain scenario where you did it by mistake. When are you chayav a Korban? Because the Gemara brought me a pasuk from Korban Chatos. It didn't bring me. Now the Gemara's answer then becomes a more general answer. You have to do a complete transgression in order to be chayav Korban Chatos. It's enveloping of all the averos you bring Korban Chatos for. On the other hand, it's not enveloping of all of Hilchos Shabbos. Right? But you would only notice that if you asked yourself the question, wait, which aspect did the Gemara deal with? When you look at a pasuk, you have to look back to the law and say, which pasuk did the Gemara bring me? Ah, it brought me a pasuk about Edim Zomim. So the Gemara is answering me a rule in Edim Zomim. That will not enlighten me about Makos too much. That will not enlighten me about Cholol too much. This is a recurring theme in Shas. As we learn, our halachas always overlap. Right, we're always dealing with more than one thing, just like here. They're Edim Zomimim, about a Cholol, they get Makos. I have three concepts. That's why I said when the Gemara asked me, Nohani Mili, I have to ask, what did the Gemara just ask me? Where did what point of this halacha come from? I have to be very focused on to notice that as I'm reading it. That's when we start learning the way we should. When we notice what point did the Gemara ask, what point did the Gemara answer, and we have to look for which word did the Gemara darshan. From which word did the Gemara get the answer? Meaning, I have to focus. What was bothering the Gemara with the question? Ah, what was bothering the Gemara with the question was, Minani Mili, the Gemara said, how do I know you don't make him into a Cholol? Ah, that was what was bothering the Gemara. A very specific point. So the Gemara gives me an answer, a din in Edim Zomimim. Bar Poda Omer. Now, if my answer is an Edim Zomimin, then I will know how to apply it, or I should know how to apply it throughout Edim Zomimin. I might not know how to apply it in Cholol, I might not know how to apply it in Makos, but I should figure out how to apply it in Edim Zomimin, which is what we asked. How far do I take this concept of you got to give them everything they meant to administer? Because it also contradicts the concept we read earlier in the page. Earlier in the page, we learned that if they tried to give the death penalty to the adulterer and the adulteree, the man who gets chenek and the woman who gets sreifa, they will only get chenek. But wait, they tried to give her sreifa. They could say, I only meant to give him chenek. So why can't they say...
Adultery is...
The female. Okay, whatever. The man gets chenek. The woman gets sreifa. Whatever. Over there, I'm fine giving them only one. Why don't I say, hey, you tried to do two? I should give them both. Burn them as I hang them. No, that's okay. Why? So we have to, if we were learning more B'iyun, we would sit down trying to figure out, wait, what's the difference? Why over there are you willing to say, hey, I only meant to do this? Yet by a halal, you say, no. You meant to hurt him. You meant to hurt his kids. You meant to hurt all the generations. If I can't give you all that, then no. And like Yehuda correctly pointed out yesterday, so lashes is better? Lashes is more of kasher zamam. Right? We're going to have to get back to that question. So we move on.
I don't quite understand this question, because isn't that from Gzeiras Kasev?
Oh, that's what we will see. Yeah? Okay. He's asking a question which the Gemara hasn't yet addressed. You're right, the Gemara will give us that answer. But his point is, as far as we see now, it doesn't add up. You're telling me you can't do kasher zamam. Great. So giving him lashes is more kasher zamam? His question is right.
No, not on that. Why can't a person who's trying to make someone else a halal have a teretz? They say, well, I wasn't trying to make his kids a halal, I only wanted to make him a halal.
But in effect, he didn't make
that's it. Not exeris akasa.
I'm saying if you try and ask a question on that from the case of the Bas Koyin.
Ah, you're saying the Bas Koyin is exeris akasa.
Exeris akasa, that's why you can have an amasa.
Okay. Let's leave it as you're right, or do you want me to explain further?
If it's going to take us in a different direction, don't let's keep going with it.
I'll give the short answer. Why don't we learn from that? The Torah taught me that over there I'm allowed to say that, so why can't I say that here? Over there I'm allowed to say, I'm saying, by a Bas Koyin, I'm allowed to say they only meant to give him chenek. So I have exer sakasa, fine. So then let's say they only meant to make him a cholo. Use that logic. How do you know where to limit that logic to? The Torah taught you it's legitimate to say, I only meant to do A, even though my action would directly cause B. It's far more direct that they're burning her than it is that they're making the children halalim. Yet they're allowed to say, I was only trying to give him chenek. Why? Okay, so take it just the next step.
But he didn't want to hurt the... His intention wasn't to hurt the woman, but it's just as a result of...
Oh, so Tosva says your answer. Very good.
Well, I was asking a question.
Tosva says that their testimony wasn't even about her. Their testimony is about him. That needs more explanation.
Collateral damage.
Right. But again, so then we'll ask the same question. When they make him into a cholol, they're not testifying about his kids. When she's collateral damage, you say, give them her expungement and not hers. Okay. Obviously, this needs work. I'm just saying this is the line of reasoning we have to take as we analyze these two sugiyot. Barpoda Omer. Barpoda says another answer. And we will, whenever we see two answers in the Gemara, we have to ask a few questions. We have to ask, does the first opinion accept the second opinion? Does the second opinion accept the first opinion? This is true in the Gemara, this is true in Tosus, this is true whenever we learn something of this nature. Whenever you learn on the level of a Gemara or a Rishon, so if they're giving you two answers, you stop and ask yourself, wait, are the two mutually exclusive? Sometimes answer number one can accept number two, but number two can't accept number one, and sometimes vice versa. And sometimes neither can accept. Then you wonder, why did each one say what they said? What's the strength and weaknesses of each answer?
Didn't they say in an earlier shir, though, that if there's two answers, then, I can't remember which one they said, but it has to bring something new in it? Like, it's not that, they can't just be fully agreeing with the other, they have to have some kind of a chiddush too, no?
Maybe. Sometimes the Gemara will say, Mashma'uto Rishini Kabeinayu. The only difference between them is, where did I get this from? Sometimes it's not the answer we ideally say, but we will sometimes say that. Barpada Omer Kalvachomer, I have a fortiori, I have a law of derivation. Who's stronger, a pasuk or Kalvachomer? A pasuk. Right. We have levels, and whatever is written Mefurush Bikra is of greater weight. This is a Gemara in Eruvin, if I'm not mistaken. It's a Gemara about Eruvin. I don't remember if the Mishnah is in Eruvin. Where the Gemara says which Eruv is strongest, the Gemara says whichever one is closest to being overt in the Pasuk. So, this is a Kalvachomer. Kalvachomer is one step down. It's a law of derivation. If something's mifurash bikra, it's written overtly in the pasuk, it's on a higher level than something that's derived. Uma hamchalel eino mitchalel. If a person marries a divorcee And in doing that, he desecrates his seed, that his children are going to be chalalim. And nonetheless, he himself is not a chalal. These witnesses who attempted to create, to make the plaintiff into a challel, but they didn't succeed. Their testimony ultimately did not bring out fruits. Certainly, they should not become challelim. So, whenever we have a kal v'chomer, we have to analyze it. What's the kal? What's the chamor? Okay? When you draw it out, you start realizing there's more intricacies. So, Kohen married a Grusha. He's the Mechalel. So that's the case. And then we have the law. Eino Mitchalel, which is the Kula, right? So, if I'm showing a Kula, I have to say, this is the chamur, right? This is the chamur. What's the chumrah of the kohen who married the grusha?
His kids become a chalal.
No, the eino mitchalel. The chumrah of the kohen marrying the grusha is that he did an action, as opposed to the witnesses who did not succeed in doing an action. Mechalel. So we have to look at the case. This is the chamur, which has a kula. What makes this the chamur? You always have to check that in a kal v'chomer. Because you're going to say the edim, who were only baal lechalel, so they are kal, that means they are kal compared to my kohen. That means what makes the kohen chamur? What's the difference between the edim and the kohen? Was there an action? Did he succeed? Or was there only an intention? Right? So here you have Kavanah. The reason they're Kal is it's only Kavanah. The reason he's Chamur is because he did a Maaseh.
Because of that, if they didn't succeed.
Correct. That, now, we should notice that before the next line in the Gemara. Meaning the next line in the Gemara is going to take apart that part of the logic.
If they came, the Adim Zohanim came to make him halal, he who married a grusha, because they thought that would make him halal, but...
Right. They want to say his father married a grusha. They're trying to make him into a halal.
Oh, I thought they didn't know halal.
No. They're saying he's a ben grusha. So the edim... What Barpada is saying is the edim are kal, because they only had intent. They didn't do an action. The kohen is chamur, because he did an action.
And therefore they should get less of a punishment.
If he has the leniency that he himself, who did an action, does not become a halal, certainly they, who are lesser than him, because they didn't really do an action, so then they certainly, that's our kal v'chomer, should have that leniency that they do not become halali.
If he did something, he's going to become a halal?
Correct, only his children. He is the chamur, because he did an action, he married a grusha, and even though his children become halalim, he does not. If he'll divorce her, even though he'll have children and grandchildren that are halalim, he could go back to doing the avodah in the mikdash.
But what's the chama mina? Because we would have never thought that he would become a halalim. The Torah doesn't say that a kohen that marries a grusha becomes a
right?
halalim.
Oh, so the Torah is teaching me a concept. I'm working with the laws of the Torah. The Torah tells me that he who does this action, he's chamur, he did an action, has a kula. He does not become a halal. What would the Torah tell me about them who didn't do an action? They only gave testimony. Do they become halalim when they become edim zomimin? Barpada wants to say no.
Then we shouldn't kill them, like if they try to get the death
penalty. Oh, very nice. That's what the Gemara is going to answer. That this concept of making a distinction between intent and saying intent is less severe than action goes against the whole Torah's theme of edim zomimin. But you see how you came up with the Gemara's question on your own because you broke down the kal v'chomer. It's very critical when we see kal v'chomer to take a minute and break them down. What's the kal? What's the chamur? And why is this more kal than this? Why did the Gemara assume that? It takes another minute when you're learning, but it makes your learning clearer. Because before continuing to the next line of the Gemara, you start understanding, wait, so what the Gemara is really saying is that Edom Zomimin's testimony isn't severe. So then, like you said, so why do I ever punish them?
Or why do I ever kill them? I should give them a lighter sentence.
Right. If intent, so then that, what does that mean? That when the Torah told me I can kill Edom Zomim, the Torah was telling me I treat their intent as though it were action.
So then this Kal V'Chomer.
So then the Kal V'Chomer, right, is invalid, right. But you understand, once you broke it down to this logic...
You said that only in this circumstance the Kal V'Chomer is valid, like the Gemara does that too, also. Like, okay, so maybe this doesn't work in this situation, it doesn't work in this situation.
Well, we have to see each one. Once you break it down, you'll start seeing why. Why that works in the Gemara. You have to see that logic. It's not just that it doesn't. It's not that simple. You have to break down why we would say that. Yes?
I'm still just a little confused. As long as he's married to the Shadda, he's still halal. No, it's just that he has a...
He's not really. We won't let him do the avoda, but he's not really a halal. No.
Unless it's from the...
It's because he's going against his kiuna, but it's not really because he's a halal.
But Maisa, what is a halal? It's not that he can't do the avoda.
He could never do that.
If he were a halal, right, he would be disqualified. He's not a halal. He's not a halal. Bottom line is, he's not a halal.
Can I ask that? Maybe this is before what we were saying. But why should we listen to this Kal V'Chomer when there's a pasuk that says, "Sisim l'kasher zomim"?
That's the next line in the Gemara, right? What you're saying is that pasuk teaches me that intent is treated like action by Edom Zomim. What you're really asking is the whole concept of Edom Zomim says that intent is not Kal. The basis of the Kal V'Chomer is intent is Kal. The Pasuk Edom Zomim in Vasid Mokasher Zomam tells me Zimima, intent, has very big weight in Halacha, right? That's the next line in the Gemara. That's exactly the next line in the Gemara, but what you guys did was you showed how to understand the next line in the Gemara, because the wording of the next line is, so you just undid Edom Zomimin. What does that mean? How could you undo a pasuk? In other words, what you said, the Torah undoes by telling you Edom Zomimin, the Torah is telling you not to look at this as a cow. Don't look at intent as cow. That's what Matkiv La Ravina. Ravina attacks a harsh attack. In Ken, if I use that type of logic, that intent is light, Bitalta Tuat Edim Zomimin, then using that logic, you should really go against the whole concept of Edim Zomimin, and obviously that's wrong. He'll show you how. He just spells it out. We're out of time. He spells out how. Okay? Tomorrow is Hashem.
Meaning, is there